Hello, and welcome to Writing and Editing Today's Book Recommendation Day. I'm your host, Gina Akau, and today I'll be interviewing Judith Glynn. Let me tell you a little about Judith. Judith is a travel writer and is the author of two books, A Collector of Affections, Tales from Woman's Heart, entwines fiction with traveler's secrets and lively descriptions of Spain, Portugal, New York City, and Rhode Island. Her second book, The Street or Me, A New York Story, is a raw, riveting read about her encounter with a homeless woman in New York and their journey that returned the woman to her family in Italy. Judith is a member of the Association of Rhode Island Authors and the International Food, Wine, and Travel Writers Association. She has homes in New York City and Providence, Rhode Island. Her greatest joy is being a mother of four grown children and grandmother to six. Welcome, Judith.
Well, hello, Gina. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, I have an exciting interview planned for you. I know both of your books are very interesting, and I know my readers are going to be excited to hear about them. So let's get started. Let's talk about The Street or Me. What's the most important thing readers will learn, do you think, from reading The Street or Me?
Well, the most important thing to me is that this is a story about compassion. It's a story of woman to woman helping. It's also a story about homelessness and addiction. And it can prove that one person, untrained person, can make a difference in another person's life. I've been receiving very good reviews on this, and I get everything from it's a mystery of the heart, meaning why did I do something like this, to a book that people cannot put down, and they also look at homelessness a little bit differently than they did before.
That's wow, it. That's excellent. I know... you know, you're from New York or you have a home there. So I know there's a lot of homeless people there, you know, and it's hard to kind of connect with them. So I think that makes your story pretty interesting.
Well, this connection wasn't something that I went out looking for. It was just something about her. And I have a feeling that if people just didn't walk by so quickly, there might be something about one homeless person that they see that they're drawn to and follow that and see what happens. I know I had a very extreme case where I was befriended her for 2 years and took her home to a family in Italy, and not everybody can or will do that, but they might be able to do something that will make a difference.
Well, you know, I know people often struggle with wanting to help the homeless, but not knowing exactly what to do. And what would be your best advice on how they could deal with that?
I think the best advice, I would say, is to be yourself. Share your stories. Share your hard luck. Stop and take 5 minutes. Okay, bring a coffee or bring a roll. Bring some clothing. Do not give money. I never, ever gave money to me. Her name was Michelle Browning. Her real name was Maurelia Turaldo. And I felt just giving her money, she was a superb panhandler to begin with, and I wasn't trying to change her that way. So I think anybody, if you're so attracted that way, or even if you work in a soup kitchen, I think one of the worst things to do is to tell them to straighten up and stop drinking or stop this. They know that. It's probably better to just share some of your hard times, which I would share with Michelle often, and say, you know, I had some tough times. I was on food stamps. You can improve the quality of your life. Not easy, but you can do it. So I think that's one of the things that I would recommend, that don't be too hard, don't judge. Many times even to be around a homeless person is hard because there's an odor. There's also, you just look at them and say, how can you possibly live like that? Well, they get used to it. So I would be a dangling carrot for dignity. and for how to live a quality life.
I think that's really good advice because, you know, sometimes you struggle, you know, should you give them money? Should you give them food? You know, should you point them to a homeless shelter? And I think, you know, oftentimes these people are struggling from things that you really just don't know about. You know, it could be substance abuse or they could be dangerous even. So you don't necessarily just want to give them money. So I think that's important.
I think money is the worst thing to give. Really the worst thing to give. And that's the thing that they look for, with a cup and a little sign. And you're supposed to feel sorry for them. I mean, there are shelters that they can go to. There are church places that can get food. It's not as bleak for the homeless person, but it's very easy to sit out there, well, at least I see it in New York, and have a cup. And people feel, okay, I put $5 in there and they feel good. But I do believe you can bring them food, certainly, soup and sandwiches. And I once brought Michelle an inspirational book, and I learned not to do that because it was stolen that night. So the tangibles have to be very basic. Yeah, very, very, very basic. Give your friendship. That's the best thing to do at first.
Yeah, your time.
And, yeah, that's time. And it builds. It builds up slowly. So at least it worked. It worked for me.
Very good. Well, it doesn't seem, you know, from what I've read about you and also from talking to you, that you kind of planned this book or, you were going to go out and befriend a homeless person on your street. It didn't seem like you wanted to do that originally. And you'd actually had 30 years of writing travel articles. So what prompted you to write books?
Well, it happened on a plane one day. I was on my way to Spain, and actually I was going to just kind of figure out my life. And I met a seatmate, a very charming man. And we ended up talking the entire way. And when we landed, truth be told, we ran off like teenagers and had an affair for about 2 weeks. So I ended up using that for the basis of what I thought would be a good novel for a middle-aged woman specifically, although men have read it, and it took me 4 years to write, and it was much harder than I thought. I mean, 800, 1200 word article you could do in a day or two, but a book, I had never ever tackled one. So it took me 4 years, and luckily I plagiarized myself with travel articles that I had written. I brought many of the not so much the narrative, but the exposition or writing about a place. I brought it into the book, and it became my baby. And when it was finished, I never knew or expected to have such a letdown that it was all gone. So when that happened and it was out there, I was really looking for another long-term project. And The Street or Me, that was never the title, was kind of a dusty manuscript that was up in a closet shelf I had put away. It wasn't even really a manuscript form. It was sort of. But the dialogue was there. The descriptions were there. And when I read it, I thought, oh, wow, this is book two. So that's how books came about, from writing travel articles. They were never planned, and neither were travel articles planned. So they just happen in life. And grab those opportunities when they happen. Don't push back. So that was my answer.
I think that's really cool, you know, because, you know, I actually haven't traveled very much since, you know, I was born in Michigan, and then we, you know, moved to Citrus Heights, California, which is kind of near Sacramento. And so I was there until about, you know, sixth grade, and then I came to Reno. So I haven't really been, you know, all around the world, but this past summer I was in Costa Rica and Nicaragua for a friend's wedding. They were studying abroad, and then they got married, and it was amazing, you know, just to see another environment, another culture. So even just that experience, you know, and especially if you're used to just one place and everything is safe and you know what the streets are, and then you completely turn it around, you know, that's just, you know, instant, you know, I think very interesting writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big challenge to go into another environment, and you've hit it on it very well. That obviously, it's a culture, and you're not in your comfort zone anymore, and particularly if you don't speak the language or know the language, even the signs. I mean, when I first started to go to Spain, I didn't speak any Spanish. I speak very limited now, but I couldn't even find the ladies' room, you know, without signs. So that makes you... at least from a travel writer's perspective, to be very aware of where you are and to write about it. And it also, it enlightens your life and it adds to it. And when you see how other people live, you come back and you compare it with how you live, whether you like it or you don't. Many people leave home and go off and live somewhere else because of travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important part of our
society. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very important part of our development as a human on this earth to experience other cultures as best as possible, even if it's the Peace Corps. I mean, many people can't afford to travel, but they can afford to do a vacation that involves volunteerism. Many places you just pay for your ticket, and when you get there, in these places, you teach English for 2 or 3 weeks or things like that, and your housing and your food is taken care of. Lots of ways to skin this cat. Mm-hmm. A travel cat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I work on a college campus, and so, you know, we have actually a consortium agreement, and it's through, they call it USAC, but it's... you know, there's many different countries that students can go and study abroad. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great because, you know, especially as you're young, you know, and you're from a particular high school and you have these little cliques and you just don't get that exposure and that cultural enrichment. So I think it's great to have that mm-hmm. experience.
Well, a lot of people think they're getting the experience through YouTube and all of their Instagrams and their selfies all over the world. We're much closer today than when I started out in travel writing in the late 80s. But it's not the same as being there and smelling the smells and tasting the food and trying to make your way around. Anybody will come back, no matter what age they are, a little more developed within once they've taking their first big trip. So I recommend it to anybody. Yeah, anybody. So that's, but getting off the subject of that's how I started to write books was because of the travel writing certainly took me all over the place, and I was going back to Spain, which was, I consider my Mecca, although I don't understand why. I'm an Irish woman, Irish American, fell in love with Spain, all of it. And probably been there 40 to 50 times, and you would think I could speak the language better, but I don't. But I was going there to kind of have some solitude and figure out what was going on, and sure enough, I met somebody on a plane, and that sort of changed things for a bit. Very risky, and not everybody would do that, but I'm an adult, and it happened. And because of it, I wrote a book. So, and because of that book, I wrote a second book, and I'm beginning to think about a third. So, there we go.
Very good. Yeah. So, I have a lot of writers in my audience. You know, I build blogs for authors and small business owners, and, you know, a lot of them have, you know, experiences like you do. You know, maybe they're not travel writers necessarily, but they, you know, they have ideas, and, you know, they sometimes have difficulty kind of getting into that writing creative space. So let's talk a little bit about your process as a writer. So do you write in the mornings, at night? How does that normally work?
I'm not a morning person, so that's for sure. I am definitely a night person. And because I've been self-employed for so long, I can take some time out and write during the day. Particularly if I'm doing a quick article, I look at that as work. I don't write anywhere but at a computer. There are people who take notes. I don't know of anybody who writes longhand today, but they might be out there. I've been on a computer for so long. So I go to that computer and let's just say for a travel article, how would I approach that? Well, in the past, when I went places, I used to take a notebook, and because I'm an old secretary, I was able to take shorthand. So, and I still take some brief forms and stuff like that. So I would, you know, get the quotes and everything else that I needed and come back and transpose it, just take it right out of my notebook and just type randomly. And today I've kind of, I'm doing half and half. I'm doing notes, and I also have a little recorder, a little Zoom recorder. The only problem with that is when you come back home and you've got 8 hours of recording, you've got to sit there for 8 hours and type it out. So the first thing to do is to lay out what you're going to write about. And when you do that, different choppy paragraphs of what people have to say, if you are creative enough, you'll be able to see a pattern of what your story could be about. And then if I have travel brochures from where I've been, I just lay them out all around me. And once in a while, I'll pick up a little paragraph or a couple of sentences, which would be descriptive. And then, so you've got this all in your head, now what? So I just open up a blank page and sit there and stare at the computer. I don't think I'm any different than anybody else. You just sit there and wait. I think it was Red Smith from the Chicago Sun-Times. I may be off on that. But anyway, somebody who's well-quoted said you just sit there until blood appears on your forehead. So it depends upon your creativity, how long you've been doing it. And the most important thing is to get that first paragraph. And it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to give the reader a very quick idea of where you're going to take them. Don't get all fluffy in front and then you begin your story at paragraph 4 or 5 because you've lost them by then and you've lost yourself. So that's how I approach articles, and they might take me a full week to get 800 to 1,200 words. That's not every day, but going back in, and I edit a great deal. And keep reading it over and reading it over until you like it. And you have to like it first. It's got to be crisp. Watch the verbs. A lot of people use wrong verbs. And I read a book the other day, and she was new, and she said, talking about somebody barked. The woman barked her whatever. Well, that's the wrong verb. I mean, people don't bark, right? Animals bark, or seals bark. So another one said, hi, she smiled. Well, no, it's hi, she said, and smiled. So you've got to really watch how you're writing. So that's how I begin, and I do it once during the day, and edit during the day because I do other things as well. And then mostly I do a lot of it at night. I try not to go past 11 o'clock because then I take it to bed and my mind is too revved up and I'm too awake. And I usually do it sometimes with a glass of wine or some music or, you know, I don't have a television or anything like that on. It's a long answer. Sorry. Yeah, very long answer, but... Well, everyone approaches it differently, and the most important thing is you have to write, you know, and so many people say, well, I hate writing, or I don't want to write, I wish I could write. Well, you can, but you add the discipline that it takes, and you've got to sit there and do it, even if it's awful. At least you've done it. I mean, you can go 250, 500 words, which would be 2 pages double-spaced, and you think it's just great, and you read it the next morning, it's like, ugh, I start all over. It's hard. It's a very, very hard
book. Yeah.
It's very hard. It's very solitary. The praise doesn't always come. You have to love it. You really, really have to love it to do it. Unless you're being paid for it, you know, unless you're a copywriter, something like that.
That's true.
I kind of
feel, you know, that it chooses you rather than you kind of setting out to writer, you know, because I, you know, my bachelor's is in music and English, and I started out with music, actually, and then I added English later, and my first book is about attending law school and then deciding not to continue with it, which was very difficult for me because I, you know, at the time that I stopped, I had AIDS, you know, and so it was hard to even convince my parents that, you know, that was the right choice for me. So, and then the story just came out and I never really planned to write a book or anything, but it happened and I wouldn't literally have a business today if I hadn't experienced that. So I think it kind of just chooses us. And you have no choice but to write when that happens because, you know, it has to come out in some way or another.
It does have to come out. And what I think writing teaches, what has taught me, I shouldn't be so global here, is that you begin, when you're writing a story, either you have it pre-planned, a beginning, a middle, and an end, or when you're writing the story, it happens. And you can see the progression of a thought process. And it helps me in daily life. Some people say too much, I find, with writers, because we can be a bit creative with a situation that may not even be happening or may not have will happen, but our own creative mind will take us, and it's almost a reality. So that's one of the downsides. But the upside is, gosh, even if you have a bad day at work, I mean, don't come home and pick on the kids and the wife or kick your dog. I mean, go to the computer and write it out. And in that process, it can help your mind figure out the beginning, the middle, or the end, or the good or the bad. I don't know what I would have done if I had not had this gift. And you have to go to workshops. You have to go to classes. You could do a lot of things to, if you really want to get more serious about it than just coming home and writing about your bad day. But I think everybody should sit down and write. Why not?
Mm.
Even if they write a
letter. Exactly. Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
All right. So once they have that piece of writing, you know, either in their computer or maybe in a journal, what makes a good story?
Wow. What makes a good story? What makes a good story is it really is a good storyteller. So, I mean, you need characters with color. You need characters who do bad things or things that people think they would love to do, but they shouldn't do it. And they read about somebody else doing it. I think you need good and evil. You need to be... boy, you need to be honest, because your reader will see right through it. A good setting makes a difference. Colorful, you need to describe it. I mean, when you're writing about a story and characters, you need to sort of let the reader know what's in their medicine cabinet, so to speak. You've got to go deep. What do they look like? What is their hair that reminds you of? The color of what? Is it curly? Does it stick out at the nape of the neck? Things like that. Where your reader is, you're talking to them, and you're describing everything pretty much in detail, so your reader is right along with you. But I think really the best thing is a good storyteller, and you need to be able to, I think the shy introverts, I don't know how they write, but maybe they do. I don't know if I could explain it very well, Gina, but you have to. It's this drive inside of the writer that wants to get this story told. And it has to be believable. And this, you can't have people doing things that just don't make sense. You know? Mm-hmm. Has that helped a little bit?
Yeah, it does. And I actually, I attribute really, you know, all my writing success in my books that I've written to having a very good critique group. You know, so every 2 weeks meet with, you know, trusted group of writers who can read critically and won't just kind of whitewash, oh, it's wonderful, or say, you know, oh, that's horrible. You know, they actually read it critically, and I trust them. And sometimes, you know, people will filter in and out of the group, but that has really been, you know, my driving force, because after I graduated with my, you know, my writing major and everything, you know, I really stopped writing. I didn't even journal while I was in law school, you know, so because I was so busy. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, really having that group or a support or something really just reoccurring, even if it's a routine, you know, take a walk in the morning, then journal, and then go back and edit. You know, I think that's important, and you really don't want to do it completely solitary just because you may think, you know, what you have is done, and then you'll run it across somebody who can really read critically, and they'll tell you it's not, if they're nice enough to do that.
Right. Well, I've been, for years, I go to different, I've been to different conferences. A very good one is Antioch Writers Workshop, I think it's called. It's out in Ohio every year. I've been down to Albuquerque, the University of Arizona. There's a wonderful workshop. I think we were in Taos. And you get in with people from all over the country, and we don't know each other. It's almost like an AA meeting, you know, hi, my name is Judith, and here's my story. And you do need, I agree with you, you need that critique. I've always preferred getting into a group where they've paid to go, not just, you know, a Saturday morning at the Y, because some people who are in the paid group are the caliber of writing where I feel I am, so that the critique I take it better. And there's really an art to giving a critique, which I'm sure you're learning, right, from your group, how to do it. But yes, it's absolutely positively vital. In that fact, when I pulled out that second manuscript from the about the Street of Me, as much as I liked it, I decided to workshop it here in New York with Charles Salzberg. He has one of the top nonfiction workshops, and I'm paid to go. And actually, he has whatever students he accepts, they have to run by, you know, run some writing by him. So you're in a group with your colleagues who are on the same level. Some people with books, or some people just because they want to write something. But, and they see the flaws. Well, you really should put yourself in here, they kept telling me. We need more of you. Why did you do this? Who are you? And that was not in the original manuscript. So it forced me to go back to the computer and do it. But yes, you do need groups. I've never done it online. I don't know if you have, but there are people who join beta reading groups and things like that. I just don't have the time for that. So I haven't done it to date, but I'm sure that's helpful as well.
Yeah, I don't have an online critique group. I think the in-person interaction is really important, just because sometimes as writers, you know, we baby our work, and, you know, we get very personal with it, and, you know, somebody's tone or body language will be completely different, you know, if they wrote their feedback to us versus, you know, if they're telling it to us. And I prefer actually seeing them in person telling me something. If they hate it, you know, that's one thing, but, you know, I've gotten feedback before from people who just don't understand me, and they don't understand my work, and they don't understand my audience and my purpose, and, you know, and they just, you know, you have to kind of just shake it off, because, you know, and I think actually it helps to have that body language and that extra level of communication when you're doing something that you plan to publish. You know, so I think that's all very important. And you actually have, you know, an additional level of experience because you self-published. So I want to talk a little bit about that. What's one thing you wish somebody had told you about self-publishing before you got into all of that?
Well, it's a long, long haul. If you want the quality of a good self-published book, patience. Learn as much as you can, even before you jump in. I began this about 5 or 6 years ago, the Collector of Affections, so it was still somewhat new, and I was not prepared for what I had to learn, things about formatting a book, getting a good cover, the expense of it. You know, I suppose you can get away with it for $500, but so there's something, two really important things about being a self-published author. One is the cover. I mean, honestly, the cover of The Street of Me cost me $500. It could have cost more, but I got them down. A lot of people won't pay that. they'll go to something on the web and pay $30. And you know what? It looks like it's $30. Or they'll take their own picture and put it on there. It just doesn't fly. So you have to decide when you're going to self-publish in what level you want to be in. If you want to be considered a serious writer, author, then you've got to spend some money to do it and invest in yourself. What has come out of this for me? In a month, I am going to be in a major magazine. I won't go beyond that because it's not out yet. But I don't think I would have been in there if I didn't have quality covers. And you know something? I still found a mistake, even though I've had these books edited and read several times. The other day I found a mistake. I was like, oh, I don't believe it. So you have to go back in and pay the expense to fix it. But it depends upon the quality of self-published author you want to be. And I would always say, why wouldn't you want to be the best? So take the time to work out the manuscript. Get it edited professionally, not by your sister. And get a very good cover. And, of course, now they're talking so much about marketing plans. A very discouraging fact, and I heard this from Smith Publicity, 4,000 titles come out each day. That's a lot. Whether they're published or self-published, a traditional self. So your competition is tremendous. So why not, if you're going to have to compete, you had better compete well. I mean, I don't know how to do anything just sort of sloppy. So those are some of the things I learned. I still subscribe to certain websites that have quality into them. I know the ropes now of what I need to do for book number 3. So it will be an easier ride than the first two. But the learning curve is hard. And might as well just get in there and do it. Everybody else is. Does that help?
I think that's really good. And it's very important, you know, and I can't stress enough, you know, to authors, you know, who think, oh, you know, you just don't want to spend any money, you know, to get the book published in a professional way. You know, I think it's kind of counterintuitive because, you know, my mentor, Devorah Lansky, teaches authors how to build their brand and how to build a business out of their books. Now, not every author has that goal in mind. Some of them really just want maybe to publish a memoir for their family to read or something like that, you know, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're really not looking to, you know, really just have like a larger audience follow your book and follow your brand, you know, that's fine. But if you do actually want to sell books, you know, you do have to learn marketing. You do have to learn, you know, what works. You know, it was like a huge learning curve when I published really just an ebook. I did not publish my first book as a print book. And I had to all of a sudden learn how to do an author blog. And, you know, and then people liked my blog so much that they came to me to make blogs for them. So it was pretty cool. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I was very hesitant to even buy a domain for myself, you know, named after my author name, which is really just my name, you know, and all those things. And I put together a budget and I was very careful. But at the same time, even if you decide to do it in steps, you know, start with free things and then graduate up, you always, always want to put out a professional brand, a professional persona, or else, you know, people will see that you've slapped together a blog, you slapped together a cover, you know, you haven't edited your book, and it does not look good. So, you know, if you're going to put all that energy into writing a nice book, you really need to publish it, you know, with a plan, a marketing plan in mind. So that's my 2 cents right there.
Very important. Yeah, very important. And I look at this when people send me their books, or I'm in a large group of writers in Rhode Island, which is growing quite a bit. And I look at, some don't even have a website, and it's mind-boggling. You don't have a website? I mean, if you think you're going to be an author and get out there, you need a professional website, too. You need a very good headshot taken by a professional photographer. Because I'm going to say usually, 90% of the time you're going to need this. And you have to, I'm glad that you do design, Gina, because I'm sure you can help many people with their website of what's so important. They have to have press releases on there. They have to have information about themselves, where to buy the book, how to contact the author, something about the author. And it needs to look professionally done. Otherwise, it won't, right? So this, it's a huge learning curve, and we're still in it, all of us, as more and more and more people decide to self-publish. Although what I thought was very interesting, and you said you just did ebook. I was at a couple of book festivals this fall up in Rhode Island, and you know, you're standing out there waiting for somebody to come by and buy your book. So they'd come by, and I also have paperbacks, and I have a little card. It looks like a credit card. It's for them to download an ebook, and I sell those for $3. 95% of the people, I would say to them, do you read on a Kindle or a reader, or do you want a book? They all want to read books. They want to hold the book in their hand. They want to smell the paper. They love the feeling. They don't like sitting down trying to adjust holding just a Kindle or e-reader. So I would advise authors out there to really consider the paperback. It costs a lot more money to produce, but you will make some sales. And even if you want to send it off to your local newspaper for them to review, most of them want a paperback and not just a, an ebook. I found that too.
Yeah, and the majority of books that I used to read were all print books, and then part of my book is actually called Tales of a Law School Dropout, so the audience is very tech-savvy, and most of them, well, I don't know if I have data on that necessarily, but a lot of them read ebooks on their iPhones or their Androids, and so, and that's actually how I wanted the first level of marketing to go, and eventually I may come out with the print book, but I also switched audiences after I published that book because it was very personal, and I guess, you know, just for me, it was a struggle to put out a memoir and have, you know, just
very hard,
you know, a time period of my life that was very, very difficult. You know, and so I almost didn't, as a writer, want to market it, which is counterintuitive. But I don't know if you felt that, because you have kind of like a romantic, you know, topic for your first book. So I don't know if you ever felt that way. Like maybe it was too personal.
Oh, you bet I did. And I have adult children, and they have not read it. The first book, and you know, they know me as a mother. They don't know me as a woman, and well, don't read it. You know, read my second book. But yeah, it's very hard to put out. Once you hit that submit button and you see some sales going on, go, oh my goodness, what will people think? And then you get over that. So
yeah,
just get over it. And well, they think what they think. And the first book has had mixed reviews, most of them very good, but some women hate it. You know, I've gotten some one stars and telling me it's horrible, it's this and that. Gosh, one woman went on and on and on, three or four paragraphs, and I thought, oh, come on here. What's going on? This book must have touched you in a way that you don't want to recognize, so therefore you're going to pull me down, you know? And then other people go on and on that they love it, and that's another hard thing, too, just to start accepting these reviews that come in. But you need bad ones. So it puts the balance. And I feel a little strange because the Street or Me has all 5-star reviews, all of them. Well, no, 1 4-star. Everything's 5 stars, and you begin to think, oh, well, people think it's all my relatives, you know, which it isn't. It just happens to be a very riveting story that people they just love it. So that was the difference between the two books. Now I'm wondering what the third will be. So. We'll see where that goes. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I like how you said to get over it because, you know, after I had published and actually people read the book who were interested in, you know, either had a pre-law focus or maybe at one time thought about going to law school, they read it and then they, you know, I'm part of a Toastmasters group, so we do public speaking. And I had given a speech about my book and one of the evaluations that I received was, you know, oh, your speeches need to be more emotional like your book. And I was just like, oh my God, I don't know if I want to go there.
Oh, I love that. Oh, wow. Oh, that's good though. That's a good feedback, right?
Yeah. So I think that's very good. You know, you just have to get over it. So, I mean, part of it is just, you know, what if nobody reads it? So, you know, just put it out there. It's not going to hurt anybody. Yeah. So what's one piece of advice you'd like to give other first-time publishers?
Oh, just believe in yourself. That's the best advice. Certainly love yourself and love your project that you're going to work on and get out there. You have to listen to some critiques, but you cannot take them all to heart. You know what's best for you, and you know how to write your story, how to tell it, how to create the tension and conflict which needs to be there. Only you can do that. Your critics or those who tell you not to do it, you just can't listen to them. You've got to take the chance and jump in and stare at that computer screen, even if you're sitting there for an hour. Eventually something will come, and then you can work from that. Do not give up. That's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. I completely agree. So what's next for you?
I've spent some time here with the two books. I do marketing backwards, and once they're out, I start marketing them. And I've been building my brand more and more as an author. I also have another life. I'm a landlady, and I had a small little business in New York, so I'm beginning to think more and more just doing more writing. I'm thinking next of having said you should have a paperback, of a Kindle single. I don't know if I want to go in the long haul for a book, 2-3 years of a book. And I'm thinking maybe 15,000-20,000 words for a single or a novella. And I've got the title for it, and I actually, I knew somebody very close to me who was now incarcerated, which is two people, which is I'm not somebody who normally would hang out with jailbirds, you know? So it's an interesting story about a downfall for either one of them. So I may, in fact, write about that. So that's out there. And there's always the odd travel story. I just wrote something about the New York City High Line. Finished its third section. That's on the International Global Rights is the name of it. Is a website of the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. So I always have a little travel story in the back of my head that I want to get out to. So just keep writing. That's all it is. It's the itch that doesn't go away. You know, no matter how many times I scratch it, I still finish the story and it's like, oh, time to write another one. So that's what I'm
doing. Ongoing process.
Ongoing.
How can people connect with you? What's the best way for them to find you?
Well, I'm going to send them to my first class, I think, website, which is Judith Glynn, and that's glynn.com. There's a contact form on there. There's little tidbits to read here and there. I also do once in a while do some travel podcasts, and the one that's on there now is about Lexington, Kentucky, and the Bourbon Trail, which was one of my very favorite trips to take recently. And they can read about my book. There's some excerpts there. If they want to go directly to buy the book, of course, there's always Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Kobo. And I think those are the best ways to get in touch with me. There's a contact form on judithglynn.com, and I'd be very happy to answer anybody with any of their questions they have about writing or books or me. That's the best way.
Very good. Very good. Okay, so one more time. I'm going to say it slowly so you can get it down. It's www.judithglynn, J-U-D-I-T-H-G-L-Y-N-N, www.thebookbeat.com. So, and I will give a little bit of kudos. It's a beautiful website. So if you're looking for an example of what an author should do with an author website, and also, you know, to get interviews to help people promote you, this is a beautiful example. So judithglynn.com. I highly recommend it. One final thing. Okay, so Judith, we've talked about a lot of things today. So if you could sum it up with a tip or an action step for writers, what would that be?
Well, the tip is the same tip that I've been talking about, to believe in themselves, to decide to tell a good story, to pretend you're sitting down with your best friend over a drink and you say, well, let me tell you this. And that's how you begin your story, and make it as lively as possible with a lot of conflict, and just get out and do it. Many people do follow the traditional route. You can do query letters out to agents. You might get one. You might go the traditional way, or you might decide to go self-publish. The most important thing, though, before you come to that decision, is to sit down and write, period. Go to that computer, shut off the TV, turn off your cell phone, and write something.
Very good. Just do it. Don't be afraid. All right.
No.
Well, thank you, Judith.
Thank you, Gina.
Yes,
it's been wonderful to talk to you. All right.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
And to our audience, thank you so much for joining us for Writing and Editing Today's Book Recommendation Day. I hope you have a wonderful day, and happy writing.